Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, the Media Project is underway once again, and we're going to have a quote of the week momentarily here, because I've
written something
that's going to be great. Maybe this will be a new trend. You know, we'll do something cool on this show that people look forward to. And
sure, we could do the song of the week also.
Never mind that. That's Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at UAlbany. Joining us here is Rosemary Armeo, investigative reporter and editor from the University of Albany Journalism Faculty. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. So you ready for the quote of the week?
I'm ready. Let's hear it.
Here we go. This is from political scientists Norman Ornstein and Thomas Mann, who recently wrote in the Washington Post, "A balanced treatment of an unbalanced phenomenon distorts reality." To which Katrina Vandenhuvel, the publisher of The Nation, added, "The role of journalists is not to give every party equal space or accede to the red herring of false equivalence, but to pursue and publish the truth."
Do you think, Rex, just for the audience, because I think it flew by very quickly, you could explain what Ornstein and Mann, who were the two sort of centrist top political scientists in the country, meant by that quote, because I'm not sure I'm following.
She said journalism is not good. Is that a good way of...
Well, I guess I would say it's that objectivity doesn't work for all those people who say just print the news. When you do that, you get unbalanced coverage.
That's right. That you, when you...
Not every issue has two sides.
Not every, in fact, most issues have 20 sides, and they are of not all equal value.
That from the two top political scientists in America?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
As Katrina Vandenhuvel writes, in a high-minded effort to impartially represent all sides of a story, reporters frequently give more credence to an argument than the facts warrant.
No,
so,
right.
For example, there was, I was just reading an article actually in the Chronicle of Higher Education about the difficulty in climate science. You know, 97% of the professors who are engaged in this field agree that humans are having a significant effect on climate. But, you know, a lot of journalists believe they need to sort of balance their coverage.
Yeah. We see it with evolution and creationism in schools, too, where science is heavily, again, on one side, but many passionate people argue for something different.
Put another way, what's the other side of the Holocaust?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, we get
Hitler.
A lot of angry letters to the editor from people, or just not even published letters to the editor, literally letters to the editor. I get communications from people who do complain that we accept the reality of human impact on climate change. People saying, you're buying into this argument and your coverage is therefore biased. I feel that our coverage, which recognizes and reports this, is accurate rather than being biased.
And if you're at home and you hear the banging sound as Rex speaks, it's because he insists on making his point emphatically by banging on the table. Just thought I'd point
this
that out.
This is a little point of radio here. I'll get better at this anyway.
I'm glad you're getting yelled at, Rex. Yeah. It's usually me. It's like I'm such a print person. I move away from the microphone. I sputter.
Speaking of which.
I knew you were going to bring this up.
What about this letter that we got from a graphic designer who says, "First, I have to say I love the show and I wish it was a full hour!" But now I have to take umbrage with Rosemary's diss on design. last mm-hmm. week, I believe you said
yes.
that, I can't quote, would you like to say what you said again?
I said that no print publication that I'm aware of, and I invite my detractor here to set me straight, has ever been saved by putting money into a new design. That newspapers, they can be updated and modernized, but you're not going to change the look of them. People do not flock to a newspaper because it has a cool design.
Well, so now we have the Daily News importing a former Murdochian to be their editor. In trouble, this guy's in trouble, you know, on the other side of the pond. And here he is. And all of a sudden, maybe it's my impression, but I'm seeing many more scantily clad young women in the Daily News than I've ever seen
before.
That's
a sort of design element, I guess, Alan.
Well, is that a substantive element or is that a design element?
Well, the redesigns that I've seen over the years tend to center, yes, on little cutesy little things like that. Like you'll put a basketball above the banner, above the name of the newspaper, and that's supposed to enliven the page. And suddenly, you know, that's going to draw more readers.
Well, it might.
And I don't buy it. I think we should read some of this letter.
Yes.
She should be allowed to take umbrage.
I think sure, so, because I actually agree with this writer significantly. She says, if something is designed poorly or not designed, no one will look at it to read what the words say. It's a subliminal thing, really, but we'd all miss it if we didn't have it. She says, I broke down and bought a Rachel Ray Everyday magazine, but when I tried to read it, I felt like a 7-year-old with ADHD. And she confesses that she has a vested interest in design, but she says that art to break up type, white space, heads, subheads, they're all important to making a piece appealing enough that someone will want to look at it and absorb the words written there.
So now when we teach, Rosemary, in your program, we teach, there's always a magazine course.
Mm-hmm.
Do we teach about white spaces and graphic design?
No, actually, we have TU people teaching about that later on in the program in a different course. The magazine course we keep to writing. And, you know, I mean, white space and appealing use of art and all that, how can I disagree with that? But what I think I was talking about was the emphasis of people trying to reinvigorate an old print product, have turned to design rather than to reporting techniques or topics.
Okay, but
and that's where the emphasis and the money ought to go, and it isn't, or it hasn't up to now.
But you mentioned, and perhaps you'll take it back, putting a basketball on top of the thing.
They'll take it has to pop out,
yes,
or a cutout. Those were huge in a Florida paper I worked at. Instead of running a picture, we were going to cut it out so there was white space and the head stood out. Meanwhile, we were firing two sports reporters.
Well, if I'm able
I'm bitter. I'm bitter. I'm sorry.
Well, if I'm just able to finish the sentence.
Okay, I'll sit down now. It's this coffee you gave me.
Okay.
Good, isn't it?
It is.
Well, like but here's the point. You take a basketball and you put it on top of the page. There are some people who are fanatic basketballers. In this country, sports are king and queen. And so you put a basketball up there, you might just get the juices flowing, you know, from all your basketball subset who see it up there, don't you think?
I repeat my challenge. Show me a redesigned newspaper that got more readers. That would be the empirical proof. And all the emphasis on redesign has not saved newspapers or other print products.
I think the difficulty is if people view design as an end in itself. Design is meant to support content. Design is meant to convey a meaning. Now, we're going to be able to redesign the Times Union next year when we have a new press because we'll be able to reproduce photographs well and we'll have a good-looking paper for once. And when we redesign, it will be to emphasize the great photojournalism that our photographers have been doing, which we haven't been able to emphasize as much because our press is lousy, right?
Wow, so you got two bangs on the table there because you're never going to get them. Okay,
I have to answer this because it's true. There are fantastic photographers at the Times Union. Their work is not shown off to good effect because you have a template that's put on you by your design. And so you need to have, for example, on the local front, a picture with a story. And it can be any piece of crap, photo that you have. And that's not Skip Dickstein's best, you know. If he has a great photograph, you have to make... He's a wonderful photographer. You have to make room for him someplace else. But you're still going to put a lousy picture, and it's going to be big because your template calls for a big picture there.
But there are, in fact, studies, Rosemary, that say... iTrack studies that actually do suggest that design has an impact on readership. Mm-hmm. That if you don't have a point of emphasis visually on a page, people will gloss over it because it just grays out. matter. Design matters.
So no, we
and I want to point out though again that graphic designers are the people at Poynter doing that. It's always in conjunction with the word, and that's the mantra. That's design is to support content, mm-hmm. but in practice, to support that design, we.
Who eliminates content? I think it's a false dichotomy. There's not a choice between the two. In doing our staff reductions, which every newspaper has gone through, you know, our effort has been to preserve reporters on the street. We have, actually, our art department is half the size it used to be.
Okay, but I was struck by something the other day. Somebody told us here, who was into our web program, who told me that that some of these web things where you put information things, the hell with it, Google. So if you put in a name, depending on who you are, where you've gone before, you're
going to
get a different response than somebody sitting somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's fascinating because I can't wait to see that come to newspapers online also. So are you following me? So in other words, you'll design a program so that you'll know when somebody comes what their interests are, and mm-hmm. you'll give them what they want.
Yeah.
Isn't this interesting? Fascinating?
I hate this, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I do, too. But it's a reality. This has been...
Who goes to a niche or a custom newspaper and puts in, I want to read all about corruption in the municipality and the sewer system in Colony. These are stories that you put in a newspaper, and people found them on their way to reading about the basketball game, for example, or a nice feature on with a big photo. Where's this reporting going to go?
I'm sorry to tell you guys, but this is the reality.
Yes,
wish it weren't true, too. I love newspapering. I love the serendipity of coming across something terrific, but newspapers are not surviving that way. The model that we have enjoyed is not going to endure. So you have to make do with the way things are working now.
Well, yes, but this 1984-ish, even though 1984 is long behind us, the concept that you will not be reading the same thing everybody else is reading as determined by your newspaper editor is fascinating to me.
Yes, and we've talked about this often before over the last several years on this show, actually. Maybe you weren't paying attention.
I probably wasn't. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's because we didn't design it and lay it out well so you could see it.
Or because I wasn't talking. I consider what you guys say to be very close to worthless.
I was going to suggest you were looking at scantily clad models in the tabloids.
Now we know what you mean by design. You know, but the reality is that people are increasingly, especially younger readers, aren't going to be going to a place for their news anyway. It is going to be search and referral that is going to give them things. It is like Facebook tells people and Twitter tell people through who they choose to affiliate with, gives them their selections of information.
Yeah, and YouTube.
And so
what's so terrible about that is there are some things everybody ought to know. And just because you're stupid or not interested in it doesn't mean you shouldn't have it.
Think of the impact on society, on the tearing of the fabric that has been knit by virtue of the fact that people have all had access to the same information. And there's going to be a lot less of that. We're going to be a much more disparate society, don't you think?
Yeah.
Rosemary, if I could, I heard something on NPR yesterday, which makes me want to talk to you about this. There is a huge spate of journalist killings in Mexico.
Horrible.
And I know you know a lot of those people and that you've been there. What can you tell us about all that?
Well, it's extremely frightening because journalists have been targeted all over the world. In Eastern Europe, where I've worked, for example, you know, they are routinely jailed, beaten, or killed. But in Mexico, it is very concerted. And the bad guys, the drug cartels, are targeting journalists. And not just journalists, but their families and their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
And not just killing them, but killing them in horrible, horrendous ways. Beheadings, flayings, and doing it in a public way. It's clear to Lisa send a message that you're not going to print stuff unless we want you to print it. And the results have been quite successful. There are whole regions of the country that are not printing news about drug wars because the cartels will put them at risk if they do. It's terrifying.
But I must say, if I were your mother, I would say to you, Rosemary, I don't want you to go there anymore. not because of...
I think internationals going there is what will ultimately make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, Mexican journalists cannot do this alone. And, you know, I'm part of a group that is sending in specialists who can put out this story, even though it won't be in the local press only. And I mean, that brings pressure. It lets people know, number one. And number two is it puts pressure on the government to, like, maybe do something about the killings of journalists, which has not happened up to now.
Yeah, can't the American government put pressure on the Mexican government?
Yes, it could.
To do this. And that, I think, has got to be an objective of, you know, the great organizations like CPJ, the Committee to Protect Journalists, has got to work on the American government to put pressure on the Mexican government.
That's absolutely true. And why has that not happened? I have to think it has to do with there's problems in the American South, too, all along the border. There's increasing violence due to the drug cartels warring and competing. And it's something that's not covered widely here. And I think the government does not want to call attention to
that. Well, what I was fascinated by the story, and I think you touched upon it just now, was that they are killing reporters who they think have favored rival cartels in their reporting.
This is all about controlling what gets into the paper. There are some stories they want not covered at all, and other stories they do want to play up. Like some of the violence, they do want played up because that puts terror, puts fear into their enemies. The scary thing to me is it isn't just established reporting outlets. It's people who use the social networking and blogs. If you write about anti-corruption or about drug dealing in a blog, you can be singled out. So I don't know. I was speaking at a class at UAlbany, and it was a beginning journalism class, and so the assignment was to blog something about my speech, and I saw it up there and said, oh my gosh. I was actually a little bit nervous about it because, you know, there it was. Of course, it's a journalism student, so it isn't completely accurate, as you would expect. They're still learning. And it was like, Armeo has taken on the drug cartels in Mexico. It's like, no, I haven't.
not me.
Yeah, but wow. Do you think, because when I heard that, I thought there was a hint that maybe some reporters were on the payroll of some of the cartels. Is that possible?
Sure. There's complete infiltration by the cartels in all levels, local government, army, why not journalism, of course.
Sure.
And it takes time for the establishment of standards in a profession. Journalism in America was much more corrupt 50 years ago, reporters being actually on the payroll of politicians in this country as well.
In the state.
Absolutely. And so,
or their wives.
Well, this happens. And so you have to wonder, is this a matter of evolution? But we've never had in this country the viciousness of the killing of reporters.
Yeah, it is a strategy and a tactic. It isn't just like a, you know, a happenstance.
But I think it's terrific that you're going in there, that reporters are going in to do the work of those who are being killed.
And I really have to praise the Mexican reporters, and there are many of them who are doing this at great threat. They don't put their names on stories because that's a danger, so there's not even the glory of it. And it's amazing, much harder than anything we do here.
One of the things that happens in this country that we are concerned about is that in order to protect, supposedly, the interests of American parties, sometimes we do sit on stories. One of those that happened is the Associated Press was aware of the fact that there was this new underwear bomb threat. For several days, they sat on the story at the request of the White House. The AP learned about the threat, but the White House and the CIA said, let's please not disclose this.
Did the AP know that the guy was a triple, you know, agent or double agent, or did they just know that there was this threat?
I don't know. Do you know that?
I think they just knew that it was a threat. Yes. Mm-hmm. They did not know. That detail came out, what, like yesterday?
Or the day before. As we speak.
Confusing, yeah, when we're speaking and when this will end.
So it is interesting that while the AP intelligence writer was aware of this, Kimberly Dozier, she held on to it in collaboration with her editors thinking about
this. That just seems pretty smart that you would do that. You wouldn't want to jeopardize an operation. What was interesting to me was that the AP said, okay, we're ready to publish this, and the president, I guess, tried to say, no, hold on a little bit longer, and then they go, no, we've done our duty, and they came out with it. They still came out ahead of the government.
Right, because the government wanted to do an official announcement. We had something actually similar to that recently here in our community where another news organization was aware of a story and it agreed to Governor Cuomo's request that they wait on the story. We became aware of it and did not have a similar request and published the story, only to find out that these other folks thought that we had basically...
Well, what was the story?
I can't remember.
did you... Also, something came out this week, which I found fascinating. It's history. At the end of World War II, an AP reporter had an exclusive that the Germans had signed to surrender. kind of a, this is fascinating. And he was asked to hold it by the U.S. military, and he agreed, at thinking it would be, you know, a few hours or a couple of days, and the government wanted to hold it for weeks. And he goes, what are you talking about? This is like world-changing events. Of course I'm going to publish it. So he pushed, he sends the story into the AP, which flashes it around the world. The AP then fires him because the military complained that he had broken a request for censorship, basically. And now, what is it, how many, 60 years later, they have apologized to the family of this AP reporter saying he did it totally right. Of course he should have published. Mm-hmm.
You know, a good deal of what we found out, I'm fascinated by the press and World War II.
Yeah,
quite a series here at WAMC on it. But one of the things that's so fascinating is that we got a lot of our information that was under censorship by the American press from the Germans.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we found out about the invasion, D-Day, because, you know, it was all being held, and all of a sudden, the Germans were talking about the invasion.
Interesting. You know, nowadays, embargoes like this often don't work because of the internet, because folks with Twitter who will suddenly report something going on, you couldn't keep an invasion under wraps.
Well, the best recent example of that was the operation to take out Osama bin Laden, and some guy in Pakistan is saying, hey, you know, there are helicopters and planes, and smoke is coming up. Yeah, that was the Twitter hatter.
And even a little less recent than that was, of course, Bay of Pigs. When you're my age, then it does seem recent.
You know, actually, and I wonder if even nowadays, that's an interesting example, because the press was well aware of the planning that was underway. The Kennedy administration convinced the media not to report on it in advance. I wonder how that would go down these days.
Well, or had we done it, had the media done it, maybe one of the biggest miscalculations of the whole Kennedy administration would have been avoided.
Kennedy was famous for that quote. I've used that in journalism classes, saying later, I wish they had not listened to me.
Kind of collusion between the government and the media, we recently witnessed the spectacle of the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Quite a big event. The president stood there and told jokes and the like. And
Kim Kardashian was there. I liked it.
Tom Brokaw, no less than Tom Brokaw, criticized it. He said the glitzy, celebrity-laden event symbolizes the disconnect between the press and the public, and he says it's time to rethink it.
Does that mean, Rex, that he thinks, as I have for years with the Albany Correspondents Association, that there's something unhealthy about pretending you're adversaries all year long and then creating this sort of clubbiness together in which the guy comes on, some governor comes on or mayor comes on, puts on a dress, you know, and pretends that the rest of it is almost make-believe because, you know, it denigrates the tension between the two sides.
You know, I was a guest this year at the other big dinner in Washington, the Gridiron Club dinner, and the Democratic speaker was the Democratic National Chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and the Republican speaker was the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who had a bad political career last year. The president was off in Korea at the time, and so he sent Leon Panetta to speak, but everybody was telling jokes and laughing, and Rick Perry was telling jokes on himself and so on. And there was something a little bit, it was great fun. I had fun, but it was unseemly in a way. It made you think, if Rick Perry is this disrespectful of his own campaign for president, how serious about it was he? If we can all just sit back and say, oh, this doesn't really matter, it was all for show, which is the inference that you draw from this. It does make you worry. Now, I think that there are lots of tough-minded reporters who are going to go ahead and ask the tough questions, but it's still, it just sets it up as almost a facade rather than being a sincere us and them issue.
Well, as you know, Rex, I've been talking about this for years, and I've gotten a certain amount of animosity, because don't forget that we have the specter here in Albany of people in the press actually hawking tickets to people who they are covering. And that ain't good.
I hope we'll get a letter. Remember, folks, you can offer your thoughts to media at WAMC.org. Maybe some of our own Times Union reporters will want to do that. I used to be involved in the LCA show, and it was
interesting that some of the best writing that you see in the city comes out in the LCA skits.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true. Goodbye pages as people retire from or downsize from media outlets.
Is that you were going to say you thought that
maybe some of our own reporters who are involved in it, as I was for many years,
want to be a little bit more defensive?
Yeah. You know, there may be some good, you know, the White House Correspondents Association dinner raised $132,000 for scholarships. That's a good thing.
Yes. Right? And in fact, our local guys say a good deal of it is for charity. I want to know about the other part of the good deal.
In other words, you know, where's the rest of the money going?
The band.
All right, so we have to go. We'll see you next week. For Rosemary Romeo and Alan Chartok, I'm Rex Smith. We will see you.
I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption.